is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. An American future of socialism. What is the meaning of socialism to Americans today, and what must Americans know about socialism? Well, there certainly is a lot of talk about this today in the political circles. But how real is the risk to a socialist America, to the United Socialist States of America even? Well, today on Viewpoint, a special program, we will talk about knowing the signs of socialism. Debbie D'Souza will join us there. Also, is socialism for godless souls? Pastor Stefan Brodin is here. A very interesting talk with him. But we're going to start at the very top here and talk about socialized medicine. Dr. Jane Orient, who is executive director of the AAPS, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, is also a general internal medicine specialist in Tucson, Arizona. And Dr. Orient has been executive director of the AAPS for how many years?
Since 1989.
Yeah, I know it's been a long time. You've been at the head of this terrific and amazing organization here. Let's start and talk about what the biggest differences that people should know, in your opinion, between socialized government, controlled medicine, and free market health care. What are the biggest differences?
Well, it's a difference between slavery and freedom, between being in charge of your medical care or having the government in charge of your medical care. It's about having choice versus just being subjected to whatever the system wants you or allows you to have. I really think that maybe we shouldn't use the term socialism, although I'm not saying it's inaccurate. We should use the term fascism because people know that that's bad. Fascism in the sense of the DNSAP, that was the German National Socialist Workers' Party, which used socialism in the title, but it didn't have government ownership of everything. It just had government control. So you had big, bad corporations profiting off the system. It was what we today call a public-private partnership, which sounds all warm and cozy. But if you'd like Facebook and Twitter and the AMA and Bill Gates and a whole bunch of other non-governmental, so-called nonprofit organizations, as well as giants, the managed care cartel, United Health, and the big pharmaceutical manufacturers, if you want them deciding what you can have for medical care, then you should be all in favor of the push towards single-payer medicine today.
I love the way you open that up, Dr. Orient. Wow, that really puts it in perspective. That's a home run right to start here, because the warm and fuzziness of the word socialism is something I've been talking about for some time. I didn't know you were going there, but it's absolutely perfect, because it really is fascist. It really is communism, and it is Marxism in all that way. But again, it's how they package it. And the one thing we talk about often is the extreme left. They are very good at packaging things, and they're very good at projectionism at the very, very best. The challenge is they have fooled very much multiple generations now, millennials, Generation X, Generation Y, into thinking that this is a real possibility for America to become the United Socialist States of America. And we're seeing that more and more now than we've ever seen before. But you're right when it comes to healthcare. In fact, when you look around the world and you look at all these other empires, really, medicine is one of the first things they government mandate to be able to become a communist country. There's a history of this, Dr. Orient, in mankind, isn't there?
Well, certainly there is. And maybe the idea began with Otto von Bismarck, the Iron Chancellor in Prussia, who thought, well, let's have state-sponsored compulsory insurance. And it sounds all Christian and compassionate. But what it really does, it increases the power of the Kaiser, because people are dependent on the state for pain relief, for life-saving And so they tend not to want to object to the government, fearing that they will be without treatment when they need it.
Let's take a brief look back in history just a moment here. In 1993, President Clinton appointed First Lady Hillary Clinton as the leader of a task force to address health care after his election, and actually was the most powerful post, and I remember this when it happened, ever assigned to a First Lady at that time. Now, shortly after Hillary Clinton began leading this task force, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons filed suit against the task force, alleging that the Clinton administration violated the 1972 Federal Advisory Committee Act. What's interesting about this, and the way I looked at this, and I want you to qualify this, Dr. Orient, but the whole essence was to bring, put out in what I would call the light of day, what they were really doing with our health care rather than the back hallways of D.C. Now, those are my words, but that's the essence I got out of that suit. Was that it, or what was there more to it?
That was the main point, was to expose what was going on, that the working group was working in collusion with a whole lot of very powerful people who are still around today. They helped write the Obamacare Act. They called the Clinton thing the Health Security Act, which again sounds all very nice. But we got access to the documents of the task force at the National Archives, which was a huge enterprise, is digging through these boxes of documents. A lot of the most important people said they didn't have any documents. A lot of the floppy disks they turned over were blank, but we did find some real gems. And I think the most important one was the discussion about the constitutionality of the act, which would have outlawed private medicine, outlawed buying a service from a private physician. And the question was, would this be unconstitutional to deprive people of the right to spend their own hard-earned money to buy a life-saving medical service? And the crux of the defense was, well, maybe it would be unconstitutional for the government to do it, but if we delegate this to private corporations, like United Healthcare, for example, which is very prominent in the task force, then it would probably be all right. Because against a private corporation like Facebook or Twitter, you have no constitutional rights. But if the government's funding in all of it and the government's supervising it, the government has all the guns. So we get the government force and the private sector money and the private sector's immunity to constitutional lawsuits.
Affordable Care Act, it became known as Obamacare. And of course, back then it was known as Hillary Care, when you might remember that politically. And Hillary went to bat for Obamacare in 2016 as well. Now, with Obamacare, there were a couple of interesting provisions I want to get your take on. And one of them is all Americans would be required to obtain the health insurance. Any citizen who chose not to enroll could be enrolled automatically by the state cooperative and charged twice the normal premium. That was kind of a telltale sign, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, there were a lot of telltale signs if you actually read the act, which hardly anybody did, and certainly not the congressmen who were voting for it.
Wow. Is, and we all remember that, that moment when they said, well, just pass it. And that was the message coming from Nancy Pelosi, in fact, just pass it and we'll read it later on. It really became a talking point that was heard worldwide after that. Another provision, the federal government would set minimum standards of all health insurance plans that would be required to cover. Insurance companies would not be allowed to discriminate against pre-existing conditions. Now, here's the thing about health insurance. Now, from what you just described with the plans, the health insurance companies were in cahoots, obviously, with the federal government. They were all working hand in hand, it sounds like, I guess, unless you, that's what I gather out of what you've explained, and that's what I always thought about it. But when it comes to pre-existing conditions, you know, I want to ask you something. What I got thinking about this a little bit more, Dr. Orient, when it comes to other types of insurances. And like whether it's car insurance, house insurance, you know, if you have pre-existing conditions with a lot of accidents or you've been burning houses down or you've been violating things, typically that comes into factor with a premium. Yet with health, it's a little different. They want it to be different. It is sort of it's very unique the way this is in with insurance standards. Shed some light on that for us. But I find it the irony of it very unique.
if you exclude, if you're not allowed to exclude high risk or pre-existing conditions, what you're offering is not insurance. It can't be insurance. I mean, if you could buy house insurance while your house is burning down, who would pay for it ahead of time?
Exactly.
And the company would be bankrupt. All the other subscribers would be out of coverage because the company would be gone. It's just, and every state that had tried mandating community rating and guaranteed issue had found that the insurance premiums went so high that nobody could afford individual insurance in those states. This is inevitable. It has to happen, and it just completely destroys the insurance market. And so what you're left with is really just a plan that will promise to cover everything you need, but it will decide what you need, who you can buy it from, and how much they will pay for it, and just outlaw your spending money out of pocket.
But with pre-existing conditions, I mean, this all plays into the cost of healthcare as well. Should that be, what's your position on pre-existing conditions within the healthcare phenomenon?
Well, the idea is that if you don't have insurance, you won't be able to buy it the minute you get sick. And this is your incentive to maintain coverage all along. And it's you know, you are sharing a risk that you might get sick. You are not sharing the bill for something that has already happened. Mm-hmm. So if you do away with the insurance company's ability to discriminate by higher premiums or by denying coverage, what you're doing is putting a big incentive to not buy insurance. And of course, that's exactly what it does. And that's why the premium costs have to go up and up and up. Now, of course, there are people who have pre-existing conditions who through no fault of their own, and it's they have what is a non-insurable risk. That does not mean we can't help them. And we had all kinds of systems to help them. We had charity hospitals, we have county hospitals, various arrangements for voluntarily help to cover these medical bills. And it turns out that is far less expensive to just pay the bill for the care that people get when they're sick than it is to pay a third-party payer to hold their money and then dole it out if and when this eventuality happens. So the best way to help people is just to help them. It's not to force them to pay into a big pool of money, which is going to be wasted and diverted and not be there for people when they need it.
Let's look at the bureaucracy of healthcare and talk about the drive and cost of healthcare. One of the debates or arguments that I've always discussed is opening up healthcare across state lines. And the other big area was tort reform within the healthcare industry. And these are mechanisms to the drive and cost of healthcare. What, in your opinion, are the drive and mechanisms of healthcare? What's driving that cost up?
The driving mechanism is third-party payment. There never should be third-party payment where somebody else is paying the bill other than the person who's getting the service. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be that the doctor or the hospital sent the patient a bill and the patient paid the hospital, and then the patient filed a claim with the insurance company and the insurance company paid the patient. As soon as you did away with the direct link between the payer and the receiver of services, then we got into all of these perverted incentives. There's no incentives for hospitals to save. There's no insurance for insured people to spend the money prudently. And there's every incentive for the insurance company to micromanage. In fact, they have to, or else they'll go out of business.
Yeah, it's the old middleman syndrome, isn't it? Right? I mean,
right.
The more you have involved, the more
right.
costly it is. Let's take a look at what President Biden is proposing here. So just recently, he signed a series of healthcare-related directives, and he described it as reversing the damage that was done by former President Trump, he says, which includes taking action to rescind and target anti-abortion rules as well, was one of the points of interest in there. And it always gets political again. It's never a day goes by where it doesn't. He says this, President Biden, "I'm not initiating any new law, any new aspect of the law. And he says, I'm restoring the Affordable Care Act and restoring the Medicaid to the way it was before Trump became president, which by fiat he changed, made more inaccessible, more expensive, and more difficult for people to qualify for either of those two items.
The law gave the secretary tremendous discretion into what was required and what wasn't. And what Biden has done is reverse the rules that allowed people who could not afford Obamacare to get some type of insurance that they could afford and that met their needs. It might not pay for abortions. It might not pay for everything else that Obamacare mandated, but it did provide for the care they were likely to need. And without that, they were simply unable to purchase things. If they were made $1 too much money, they did not get the taxpayer-funded subsidies, and they were stuck with premiums that were three times, four times, even higher than what they had been paying before.
Where do you see the Biden administration? What's worst-case scenario? Where are they taking healthcare in these next few years?
Well, I think they're taking it into a system in which patients have no physicians that really care about them or that are responsible to them. Everybody will be in a bureaucratic system that is ruled by drop-down menus determined by the big managed care cartel payers. And patients who want something outside of that may find it very difficult or impossible to find an independent doctor who is willing or able to provide it.
And so that's not obviously a promising future. Let's take a look now at really the future of healthcare you see in America. What is inevitable? What do you get out of all this right now, Dr. Orient? I mean, do we have any way? I mean, we all get the sense. I mean, we're headed somewhere with this whole talk of fascism, as you say here. I mean, one of the biggest things, as we talked about right up front, is healthcare is always taken over by the state when these things are happening. Will we be able to prevent this from happening, or is it inevitable that it's going to happen here in America?
Well, I think people have to insist on the right to opt out of the system. Some people want in this, oh, this is great, it'll cover everything, okay. But you need to have the right to opt out. You need to have an escape hatch so that a free market can develop alongside it, just like they had private plots that fed the people in the Soviet Union when the collective farms couldn't produce enough food. These little private plots that people were able to tend and sell and keep the proceeds of their crops were feeding the country. And we need to have a parallel private system that people need to have the right to spend their own money that's already been taxed to pay somebody who is working for them and not working for the cartel.
But if they don't allow that, because it becomes mandated, I mean, that's the first sign that we are then at that utopian moment of a socialist fascist moment, aren't we?
Well, that's right. On the ship that's going down, they want to do away with the lifeboats. And the best you can do is cling to the wreckage after the boat goes down. And I don't think anybody thinks that American medical care is improving. Hospital care can be atrocious. With COVID-19, when the hospitals started keeping out visitors, they kept out family, clergy, independent physicians. Nobody else could see what was going on. They couldn't tell whether the hospital was taking out the trash, neglecting the patient, not feeding the patient. And they were stuck with whatever protocol the hospital had. There were no independent suggestions as to how to treat the patient. And I think that things are heading in that direction, and it is really very dangerous.
Will COVID have a long-lasting impact on the healthcare industry?
Oh, I think it's destroyed a big part of it. It may have destroyed half of the independent practicing primary care physicians. It cut the revenue for hospitals doing elective procedures so much that many of them had to cut back their staffing, and so their capacity is much less now. It gave all of them the incentive to overdiagnose COVID and treat that at the expense of anything else. So it's just increased even more distortions in the system that already existed.
Let's end this segment here. Words of wisdom or a call to action, what would you suggest?
Patients need to understand the necessity of having an independent physician who is working for them. If they want to insist on a $5 copay, or maybe it's a bigger copay now, and get all of the promises of the managed care, company, well, fine, they're going to find themselves without any safety net if they really have a problem. If you do not value a private independent physician, they are not going to be available. You need to find a private doctor. You need to support the private doctors. And maybe you need to start thinking about how much you're spending every month on this managed care company for whether they do anything for you or not.
We should all have the choice to do these things, as she said. And if it's unconstitutional or not, well, Americans are going to have to stand up for truth at that point. These are all gateways into a socialist utopia or a future of communism and fascism for sure here. We're going to take up next here, knowing the signs of socialism. And when you take a look historically at Venezuela, it's not just a talking point, people. Well, up next, Debbie D'Souza was born in Venezuela. I can speak about this firsthand here. We'll continue on with Viewpoint, an American future of socialism, right after this.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
What are the signs of socialism? If we're going to defeat socialism and that future we talked about, knowing the signs is going to be critically important. Well, I sat down with Debbie D'Souza for a full hour and talked about her upbringing as a young child in Venezuela, her move to America, and what are the similarities and signs of socialism. Are the threats real? And where do we go from here? Now, Debbie, again, was born in Venezuela. She's an American conservative activist, columnist, filmmaker, and producer of the Dinesh D'Souza podcast. So, what we're going to do now is up next, I'm going to play some very vivid highlights from that talk that we had on knowing the signs of socialism. And you'll get a sense of where we're going. And then I'll tell you on the other side of this exactly how you can hear the full hour. But listen in now to the engaging conversation of Debbie D'Souza.
This is something that I've been very passionate about for many, many years. Even before meeting Dinesh, I used to do presentations comparing the left in Venezuela and the left in America. And Malcolm, let me just tell you, they are identical. The only difference is the language. Venezuelans speak Spanish and American left speak English. That's the only difference. Everything else is exactly the same. So I grew up in Venezuela in a very prosperous time. I was born in the late 60s, and so I lived there in the mid to early 70s. And so when my parents divorced, I was 10 years old and moved to Texas, where my mother is from. So I have two beautiful nationalities. My mother is Mexican-American, and so she grew up in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And so that is where I spent my latter years, my latter childhood, 10 years and up. And I will tell you this, when I was in Venezuela, we were quite well off to the point that when I moved to Texas down in the Rio Grande Valley, which happens to be one of the poorest areas in America, I thought I had moved to a third world country.
Wow.
So it was a very, you know, rude awakening, you might say, because I really thought, wow, here I had everything in Venezuela and I moved to the Rio Grande Valley and there's hardly anything here.
Debbie, what year was that approximately?
It was 1976.
Okay. And what year, tell us the era where Hugo Chavez was in power there, please.
Right. So Hugo Chavez ran for president in 1998. Right. So still a long ways away from that happening. Now, because I have family in Venezuela and still do, I kept very much in touch with them. And I was very, very politically minded, even as a kid. I got a degree in political science and I loved comparative politics. And so I completely was, immersed myself in learning about the Venezuelan political system and of course the American political system. So I understood it very well. And I started to see some changes in the Venezuelan political system that were very disturbing. And there was some corruption on both sides, but the problem came when this man, Hugo Chavez, was very charismatic, and he ran as a third party candidate. My grandparents, my father, belonged to a center right party called COPEI. And so I was a COPEIana, much like a Republicana, like a Republican, right? So right. That was a center right party. That was my family's party. And then there was Acción Democrática, which was more of the social welfare program side. So more left, you know, but both were very similar in some ways, right? But the other one was a little bit more Christian-like, more we have our rights from God. And the other one was more we have our rights from the government. So if that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea.
Yeah, and it's not easy to run as a third-party candidate and win anywhere.
Exactly. But he came in as the anti-corruption candidate. So yeah. He wanted to come in and say that he was going to be the candidate that was going to take Venezuela in a new direction. However, he lied about that direction. Socialists, you know, and him in particular, they are very, they pretend to be religious, right? He pretended to be a good Catholic, but in fact, he was not. And there are multiple sources that say that he practiced Santeria, which if you know what that is or don't know what that is Satan worship. So he was definitely not a Christian man. He was very much with the occult. So that too is kind of a picture of what these people are, these socialists are. They don't believe in God Almighty. And they want to, they're not even generous people, because we'll talk about this a little bit further when we talk about why kids think socialism is a good thing,
right.
But they want you to think that they're being generous or that they are kind or they care about the poor and the needy. But in fact, they use all of that as a tool to get in power.
You know, let's tell people too that Hugo Chavez there, he rewrote the constitution in Venezuela as well. Listen to these similarities now. He clamped down on the freedom of the press. He again, as you were just mentioned with private industries, Debbie, he nationalized over 1,000, in my research, about 1,000 private companies, destroyed the national currency, hyperinflation came in and all of that, of course. And of course, where are we now? They're spending, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars here in America. We're going to be struggling with and suffering with the same problem. There's a price to pay for all this careless spending that's been going on for decades now and is now coming to a crescendo moment, isn't it? You know, Debbie, you know? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, no, he did major damage. And you know, people always assume that when he came in, you know, he started the Socialist Party of Venezuela, but not so. It didn't happen for about 9 years.
Now, there were some other similarities to keep going here on the socialism road, Debbie, that Chavez promised when he rewrote the Constitution. And listen to this now, you will know immediately. So like, all right, some of the carrots he dangled were, now brace yourself, people. He dangled, to government-free healthcare was one, right? Government-free healthcare, government-free college, government, and social justice. Debbie, where did I hear those from before? Can you tell me, please?
Well, as you know, they are the rob Peter to pay Paul ideology. So basically, they believe that if they promise people free stuff, that the people receiving the free stuff will always keep them in power. And this is one of those similarities that is right there. I mean, in your face. Yeah. If you cannot see that Hugo Chavez, the Socialist Party of Venezuela, uses poor people or people that don't want to work, whatever you want to call it, lazy people, as kind of a tool to get elected. Like, hey, if you know what, you actually don't have to work, you, because we're going to take care of you. You're going to get free college. You're going to get free health care.
There's the carrot.
Right. You're going to get anything you want because you are going to be just fine, because we're going to take good care of you. These rich people, they're in it for themselves. This capitalism stuff doesn't work because, you know, it's just for them. But for you, I'm going to give it to you. And that is basically the mantra Democratic Party.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're all seeing that. That's exactly it. And, you know, the other thing that people may not realize, and I do want to point it out, is the similarities between our model and Venezuela model. And we're talking Venezuela back in the day when Debbie was referencing earlier. I mean, it was a very prosperous nation with an amazing future, an amazing future. It was really the most wealthiest country in that whole region. I mean, the whole Southern Hemisphere. I mean, they were it. And you see how that totally left. But here's the other similarity with the model here. They had a presidency. They had a legislative branch. They had a Supreme Court. And here's the other trick. Get ready for the drum roll, people, because after several Supreme Court rulings that went against Chavez in 2004, guess what he did, my fellow Americans? Well, he stacked the court. He passed a law to add 12 new justices to the Supreme Court. Debbie, where are we hearing that from now? Do you know where that's being heard?
Yeah, it's very familiar. Could it be Biden and Harris?
Well, you just heard some of the highlights of that program, but I encourage you to listen to the full hour of that broadcast, which is entitled Knowing the Signs of Socialism. Now, you can hear that on America Out Loud Talk Radio. It plays on Monday, if you listen to this viewpoint this Sunday, today on Sunday. And you can hear it's in entirety on my daily broadcast, The Voice of a Nation. So it plays at 6 and 10 p.m. is an encore, Eastern time now, but you can hear it anywhere in the world in any time zone you're in, on iHeartRadio or on our world-class media player or apps, Apple, Android, or Alexa, of course. You know how to reach the network. And again, all of these shows go to podcast, America Out Loud Podcast Network. All of those points of contact you can get back at AmericaOutloud.com. Now, in the full program, we'll talk about where the polls are headed, how Americans, what they really believe in socialism. The comparison, the very interesting comparison between Venezuelans and the socialist tendencies of what Chavez had done there and the Democrats here in America. How the lies were bestowed on people and ignorance was the call of the day. All the free stuff that was offered from government and never delivered upon. How the media turned their face and how they were taken over. Many of the glaring indicators we'll talk about, and the structural changes that took place that changed Venezuela to a very promising future to a miserable hellhole, sadly. It is a piece of history that is quite interesting to look back at, and certainly as we are dealing with it here in this country now. So again, I invite you to tune in and listen in on Monday. And again, all of these shows are back on podcast once they play on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Now, what we'll do now, up next, I want to introduce you to a gentleman. You've probably heard him before. Pastor Stefan Brodin is going to be with us. And what a conversation we're going to have now. Is socialism for godless souls?
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@AmericaOutloud.com.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down. You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference. Where is God in all of this? It's an ongoing question many of us ask. And, you know, when you look at the history of socialists historically, I mean, you have a hard time seeing faith at the center of any fascist country, for sure. And communism, it typically is not in the column of a God-loving nation. It is typically on the side of Satan, if you will. And I know that says a lot here, but it says plenty. So we're going to, Pastor Stephen Broden joins us. And Pastor Broden is the senior pastor at Fair Park Bible Fellowship, co-founder of the National Black Pro-Life Coalition, and president and founder of Protect Life and Marriage in Texas. There was an article in Christianity Today, November 2019, that asked the question I want to ask you. Does socialism have to be godless? How would you answer that?
The answer is yes. It is godless in that those who have designed it and constructed what socialism is are men and women who are anti-God, and they use socialism and communism as a means by which to destroy the influence of Christianity and religion in the culture. It is not incidental or accidental that Karl Marx said that his goal in life is to dethrone God and to destroy capitalism. And he sees the two intertwine. In order to get rid of capitalism, you have to get rid of God. And so I think it is a reality that is connected with the very existence of socialism. It has its origin in communalism, which I think Plato wrote about in his Republic. And in his Republic, he talks about getting rid of private property, of liberty, and of freedom. And when you do that, you get rid of God's definition of who we are.
When you look historically at how God has been taken out of our society here, I mean, we've always referenced America as a Judeo-Christian nation. In God we trust. Yet we've seen now for really decades this attempt to pull God out of everything. Initially, Pastor Broden, it started with just the manger scene at the local corner in the neighborhood, but it's gone much further than that now. Are these all signs, sort of as we now see what's happening in current politics today, have these been signs now playing out over the last many decades and removing God from society and in our churches and our schools to what's happening right now with socialism being talked about at the water cooler?
Well, its origin goes back further than the issue of the manger scene. We have Fabian socialists at the turn of the 20th century who were moving to dethrone God completely out of culture, and they did it through infiltration and through indoctrination. We know, for example, that the Scopes monkey trial, Darwinism was an attempt to try to replace theology and creationism with a godless idea that we evolved out of slime off of rocks. Mm-hmm. And they were very successful in doing that. And so this has been an ongoing battle right from the garden. And so socialism is an instrument, I believe, that is being used by the godless left in order to establish a godless culture in a godless world. The Bible says that we're moving in that direction. We're headed towards a one world government, one that is devoid of the divine. And as Christians, we need to examine these things through the lens of our faith and understand them as they are being presented in the public square. I think God's word has sort of prepared and prompted us to the reality of what we're facing here in America today. Marx clearly believed that religion dulls people and oppresses them from seeing from their perspective. And so they move deliberately to marginalize and mitigate Christian and Christianity and religion in the public square. In America today, Malcolm, there are two targets that the socialists and communists have aimed their guns at. Number one is religion or Christianity. Number two is the Constitution. And if you take a close look at what's happening in America today, those two institutions or elements in our culture are under assault by the liberal left. It is not incidental and it's not accidental. It is part of the design.
I want to ask you this now, based on what you talk about with the New World Order, and we're hearing a lot about that these days, the reset and all of this. In your opinion, I mean, truly, is America the last line of defense toward that New World Order, a one world government?
Absolutely. America, our Constitution, and the influence of the Judeo-Christian ethic. Let me just share with you a thought that David Rockefeller shared in 1994. He said this, quote, "The present window of opportunity during which a truly peaceful and interdependent world, a world order, might be built will not be open for too long. We are on the verge of a global transformation. All we need is the right major crises, and the nations will accept the new world order." I submit to you that that major crisis, which is synthetic and has been created for the purpose of flipping this nation, is COVID-19.
Mm-mm-mm. Boy, you took the words right out of my mouth there, Pastor. Right.
Exactly. Listen to what he says. All we need is the right major crises. Mm-hmm. And so this evil oligarchy, this evil power elite, is moving with one thing in mind, and that is to establish a new world order. And to the extent that they're able to mitigate, marginalize, and remove Christianity and its influence in the public square, and at the same time, knock off our Constitution. And the Constitution is dying a death of 1,000 cuts. They will be successful. It is to the extent that you and I and Christians and patriotic Americans understand what it is that we're facing, is to the extent that we can stop them. But if they keep us in ignorance and through censorship, keep us from talking to one another, they will be successful.
Yeah, well, they're already on the roads to all of what you say there. I mean, we talk about that extensively here. How do you see the biggest or the longest lasting impact on this COVID-19 with the church?
Well, there's no question about the church is being adversely impacted by this pandemic or plandemic. And it's not incidental to the strategy of the left. But I think we need to understand it in this context, Malcolm, is that it was Antonio Gramsci in 1929 at the Frankfurt School in Germany. His philosophy was developed into what is called cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism came to America not as cultural Marxism, but as political correctness. Mm-hmm. As political correctness. They are one and the same. They pursue what is called an egalitarian redistribution of wealth. And again, the church is in the way of that. Here's what Antonio Gramsci says. If we can influence those institutions and change them through infiltration, we can control society and the culture. The church is on that list. When we look at the six major institutions that influence us in America today, academia, media, government, business and corporations, the family, and the church, all six of those institutions that influence us are now being influenced by PC, political correctness. That ought not be the case with the church. We ought to be BC, biblically correct, and then we who are patriots ought to be CC, constitutionally correct. But listen to this. This is why, quote unquote, what is said about Antonio Gramsci. He says this. This is why many cultural Marxists, as an accurate description of Gramsci's neo-Marxist philosophy, The long march through institutions is likewise regarded as an apt summary of this strategy for establishing a necessary condition for a socialistic takeover. You've got to kill the church. And how you do that is you stop us from meeting, because there's power when we meet. The Bible says, where two or three of us gathered in his name, there I am in your midst. He didn't say on television or electronically or digitally. When we meet and assemble together, then there's a supernatural power that shows up, that enables us, that powers us to step out and to achieve the agenda of the kingdom of God, which is Acts chapter 1, you are my witnesses, Matthew chapter 28, go ye therefore and make disciples. We are charged up and compelled to do that when we assemble together. But this evil oligarchy, this evil power elite, through this crisis has found a way to shut the church down. Shut the church down. I think that there is a biblical church that is still meeting. My church, we never stop meeting. We still never shut our doors at all. But there's a cultural Christianity that God is revealing to us that does not have the power nor have the intent of being consistent and resolved and committed to doing it God's way. And so God may be filtering them out, but let me tell you, there's always been a remnant. And I believe that remnant is going to be empowered with the presence and power of God in such a way that it will make a difference in America. It can and it will make a difference in America if we're doing it God's way. Yes, they have shut us down. It has negated, I believe, the influence of Christianity in the public square to the extent that we no longer are encouraging and activating and motivating our people to be involved in the public square, because we're putting face masks on and social distancing and we won't communicate and socialize with one another. That's from the pit of hell. Mm-hmm. It is out of fear that they can control us. We are willing to give up our liberties when we are frightened that our lives are at stake, or that there is a potential that I could be hurt or harmed.
How do you see the path forward? Because we're seeing, again, a lot of signs, as we've talked about on this program today, that lead us to the fact that socialism is this idea and concept and means in America is growing at an alarming rate right now. So how do we get back on track?
I think we need to be truth tellers, and to the extent and to the ability that we have to put the truth out into the public square, we need to do it. Shows like this one and other platforms that are communicating what the truth is about this COVID-19, that it was created in a laboratory, that there is a patent taken out on it, that it is not organic, it is synthetic, that there are treatments that are available, that we can boost our immune systems through changing of our diets, through taking different kinds of minerals and zinc and vitamin D and those kinds of things. We need to flood the public square with the truth. Because right now the government is played into this hand. We got leftists and swamp rats who are pushing it because they're pushing a narrative to accomplish a goal. What is their goal? One world government. And it can only happen to the extent that they can control the mass, control the population, and they control us with fear. So it's an instrument that they're going to use, and we can't depend upon our elected officials to do what is right. We saw that they didn't do what was right during the last election. They just backed away from their constitutional oath to protect the Constitution from foreign and domestic enemies. They just backed up on it. We can't trust them.
Yeah.
So we've got to go around them and utilize platforms like yours, newspapers and blogosphere, social platforms, as much as we can, create alternatives and get the message out.
Yeah.
And I think pastors have a role to play in that as well.
Yeah, the key is going to be to work around a lot of these things, because, as you say, censorship is more than alive and well. It is predominant now in social media circles. And my golly, when it comes to newspapers, Pastor, you can forget about it. I mean, that whole scene has been hijacked by the far left, as well as television networks and all of it. And when you control the megaphone to society, you control an awful lot. And the far left Marxists are very much in power with that megaphone.
They absolutely are. But I think there's some things that we can do. And this requires, I think, ingenuity and the ability to make honest, clear-eyed assessment. I believe, and I'm an African-American, a Black man, I believe that we saw a pattern that we can implement today that was exercised in the 50s and the 60s with Dr. Martin Luther King. He boycotted. And we need to boycott. We need to withdraw our monies from supporting these Amazon and Walmart and any other, Coca-Cola, any one of these companies that are supporting this political correctness, this new social justice. We need to boycott. And that means we need to organize. And that means a clear-eyed strategy. Mm-hmm. Instead of us whining and complaining, a lot of us are whining and complaining.
Yeah.
But the pattern for success, I think, is before us.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of us are not willing to give up our Amazon Prime time.
That's it.
We don't want to give up our
coffee. Well, it's convenience, remember. It's convenience and a lot of times laziness, too. You know, you're speaking my language right now, and I think listeners know that we support all of these grassroots movements. There's a new movement, in fact, Pastor, I've been speaking about extensively in the past few weeks, and listeners know this. ShopToTheRight.com is a group that's come out of the Northeast that aligns with our constitutional faith-based rights and privileges. It tells you people you want to do business with, back to what you said, the big oligarchs and these big corporations that are sold out to China, that are sold out to Antifa, Black Lives Matter, all of these Marxist movements. And this is at the front lines here. And we talk about this extensively at America Out Loud. So I want to put that seed in there because it's important you know about it as well, Shop to the Right. It tells us to embrace our values, which is what you're speaking about, correct?
Well, absolutely. But what needs to happen, Malcolm, and I think maybe, you know, God can anoint you to get it done. You have a pretty good sized megaphone yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to challenge these many different groups. And we're so fragmented.
Yeah.
And we're so many of groups out there and all demanding resources, all demanding attention. I think if we can bring those leaders together in some kind of forum where we can talk to them about a nationwide boycott against Facebook, against Instagram, against Twitter, that we will not do any business with them. We will not advertise with them. We will not spend our money with them. And we will shut down our accounts. If we had 5 to 8 to 10 million people shut down their Facebook account today,
right,
that would have an adverse impact on them.
That's right. Listen, I love what you say there. Let me be clear. And you really have me thinking right now, and which is a beautiful thing. I love these sort of dialogues where we can think outside the lines clearly. Let me do this. A couple things I need to cover with you, because I'm having just an incredible time talking to you right now. I hope all listeners, I believe they are as well, in this important dialogue of socialism in America here. But let me go back to December 21st. You put out a tweet, a message that said this: this national crisis is about a global reset to a new world order. We can't see because we are afraid of the flu. As we hide in our houses, they push us towards one world through a pseudo president produced by the power elite. Tell me about that message, please.
I am convinced more now than ever before that this global reset is the agenda that is moving on a fast track. And in fact, we may see more and more of us moving in that direction, I think, in the next 6 months, if Joe Biden is not ousted out of office. There is an idea that was created by a man by the name of Brock Chisholm in 1940. He said this: to achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their individualism, loyalty to family, tradition, and national patriotism and religious dogma. All of those things are happening right now in America.
There are a lot of people out there, a lot of agnostic, a lot of atheist people, a lot of people that don't really get what faith is or where we are in this world. And, you know, when you start to think about this, the world, and you think about Earth, you mentioned early on, you got my mind moving when you talked about the slime coming off the rock and, oh, there we are, there's a human being, and here we become a whole species. You know, when you really think about the big world, and I look at the blue marble that we are and the universe of universes and this galactical being and world, and you think about all the coincidences for all those people out there that argue about God, and you think about all the coincidences that would happen for us to even be here to talk right now with our brains and our thoughts and our minds and our hands and our ability to have this conversation on this amazing planet floating in the universes of universes. How can anybody in their, again, right mind, and the emphasis on right and mind, think that faith in God isn't behind all of this? It stretches the imagination, does it not?
It does, but we do have something to help us to understand it, that there is a spiritual conflict of a magnitude that most of us do not pay attention to. And part of the weaponry of the left or the dark side is deception. And there are people who are deceived into believing the lie as a truth. And so what we're seeing, when many people reject, some reject because they have been deceived into believing the lie. And so a part of this spiritual conflict is cutting through the deception. Colossians chapter 2, verse 8 says this: "See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deceptions, according to the traditions of men and according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Jesus Christ." And that's a mouthful that the apostle said. He said, philosophies. I submit to you the philosophies that's deceiving us today is Marxism, communism, socialism, human secularism, and Darwinism. And all those isms are anti-God systems created by men who hated God, but they're deceiving people. Empty deceptions, deception with no substance to it, no basis for it, but people believe it because they think it has reality connected to it. Traditions of men and elementary principles of the world. The Bible says, be in the world, but not of the world. And so the conflict that we see is the battle for the mind, and the mind is being tricked and fooled by deception. And the only answer to the deception is Jesus Christ. The only way we can break through it is truth, demonstrated truth, articulated truth, truth that is practiced in the public square. And the church can't do that hiding in their houses with face diapers on, not communicating with each other, and social distancing. Satan is running a game on us.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, Pastor Stephen Brodin, a new friend we've made here, I believe. What a program. And I have to tell you, I am moved beyond moved here in this program on socialism today. I hope you were out there as well, my fellow Americans. Now, let me remind you, we have a full hour with Debbie D'Souza, which you can hear on Monday on The Voice of a Nation, on my daily program. And you want to hear this because it is an incredible talk here with her, the full hour, Knowing the Signs of Socialism with Debbie D'Souza, again on Monday. All of this goes to podcast as well, and you can get it all back at AmericaOutloud.com. What a program, what a day, and friends, I hope you have a jump in your step. And as always, thank you for being with me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.